Time is 9:23. The day is Thursday.
Don't say that in
You're listening
case.
to this at neither of those times.
Oh,
So hello when you are. My name is James.
he started. My
I'm
name's
doing
Matt.
it. I'm in. Are you not in?
Yeah, I'm in.
All right. This is the very prepared, very professional, world famous Emo Dad podcast. Keeps going. Yeah, I thought I'd just throw us straight into the pie.
Yeah, why not?
Right?
Feel a bit caught off guard, even though I knew we was gonna start.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't want you to feel on guard.
Sound different in my ears.
Oh.
Not
Oh, I don't
bad,
know why.
not bad different, just different. I don't
Oh. I don't know.
thing is like with like Apple products, they like update them. And then things change like by like 0.0005% of something. And it's very confusing.
Right. You're not sure if something's wrong per se,
No.
or if like it's just they've done something that they think is better and they didn't tell you.
Yeah, but equally, I don't want to be told every time they do something.
Yeah, that sounds exhausting.
Can't be asked with that shit.
No. But like I feel like, do you feel like as you're getting older?
Here we go.
You're more or less open to things changing.
Is your mic plugged in?
Yeah. Do I sound?
Sounds different. Stressing me out now.
All right. All right.
Check your mic. Mic check,
Yeah.
mic check.
That's
It
coming in from there.
might be fine.
How different?
I don't know, it's just different.
Speakers, blah blah blah.
Speakers,
Microphone.
spugga bugger.
Play.
Speakers,
Sound on
bro.
microphone. No, that's it.
Okay, fine. Good.
That's it. We're all normal.
Just checking. Sound check.
Think.
It's my job as
I don't
my new job as producer. Is your on Zoom, is your output your mic? Do settings, sound,
Yeah.
is it your mic?
Yeah.
Great, then let's carry on.
Separate output, input level.
His eyes are getting more and more small.
Yeah, like I think that's all. It all looks normal to me.
Okay, fine, great. It's me. It's
Well,
not.
I'm
It's not.
paranoid now, aren't I?
It's not you. It's me.
Is it though? If it, what you're saying? Do you look at your sayings?
Hey, don't drag me into this.
Am I like am I more tinny? Am I louder? Can you put some kind of
Harder.
description on the quality of my voice?
I don't fucking know. I think it's fine.
Okay.
Content.
Is it content? Is this content? Is this, are you sitting at home thinking, fucking get on with
Yeah,
it?
I'm wearing. No, they've turned off already. We've lost them.
Yeah, that sounds makes sense, makes sense. Our ability to like not edit is still whole keeping us strong in the podcast. Welcome, friends. Welcome. I'm hoping you can hear my voice. Today, as you can hear in the background, we
Ah,
are
you noticed.
planning on talking about Jason Alon Alexander Butler.
We are.
That's
Deep dive.
his whole name.
We decided that we needed some to not just talk nonsense.
Yeah, have some sort of structure in the universe.
Some topic.
The topic, and also like an actual topic that fits in with like the idea that this podcast might be about emotional hardcore music.
Yeah, which we forget quite a lot.
Yeah, quite a lot. So we'll just dive in, I reckon.
That's how deep dive works.
Yeah. I mean, why, you might say. The other reason why is because Fever 333 just released a new record. That's the other reason, which is called something.
Darker White.
What's it called?
Darker White.
Oh, Darker White. Right, good. That's what it's called. It's out. It's out now. So we're going to talk about the everything from the start, from the everything. So Jason Alon Butler, born July 16th, 1986.
July 17th, mate.
What did I say? What did I say? Dyslexia. 86. Yeah, he's of our vintage. Facts. He's of our vintage. Emo Dad facts. He is listed as an American musician and political activist from Inglewood, California. If you've listened to any of his music, I don't know how you don't know he's from Inglewood, because he says it in probably 95% of his songs.
Do we know? Actually, no, let's not go down that.
Are you going to tangent us about Inglewood?
Yeah. No, don't. Just carry on.
Are you sure?
Or is it too late?
I think it's too late for our listeners.
Okay.
Inglewood, California.
Fucking hell.
So,
this has just gone from a two-parter to a four-parter.
So, the Inglewood area is in Los Angeles County, California. It's in the South Bay region of Los Angeles, because we know that the East Bay is where Rancid is from. Facts.
This is actually useful content, because it gives us an idea of the childhood that this man had.
Right, there you go.
What a fucking shithole.
The Inglewood area was developed following the opening of the Venice Inglewood Railway in 1887. There you go. Facts. Email facts. For sports fans, here we go. The Forum, an indoor arena opened in 1967, hosted the Los Angeles Lakers. Heard of them, right? Fairly large franchise.
The yellow one.
Yeah, them. We've also got the Los Angeles Kings of the National Hockey League. I always think it's slightly weird when you find out that the Americans are playing ice hockey in a desert. Los Angeles Sparks of the Women's National Basketball Association.
Okay.
And two National Football League teams. That's the one where they grab each other's asses a lot. The Los Angeles Chargers and the Los Angeles Rams. And also the Los Angeles Clippers of the National Basketball Association begin playing in 2024.
All of these are in Inglewood?
Yeah.
What?
That's what it says. You know. Amongst the original settlers of Los Angeles in 1781 was the Spanish soldier José Manuel Ocado Mercado. I'm sorry for any actual Spanish listeners who just heard that. he was the first settler. There you go. How about that? How about that for some facts?
There's also going to be host to the 2028 Summer Olympics.
There you go. More facts. The Inglewood Park Cemetery, wisely used cemetery for the entire region, was founded in 1905. There you go. More facts.
Fun fact. Did you know that the cemetery is the dead center of Los Angeles?
Just going to pause for that one. We'll let the echoes of that one tinkle down the street. It's pretty strong. I think you could win the dad points for today. That's pretty good. Did you know, and this is pertinent, the Ku Klux Klan had a presence in Inglewood in the 1920s and had a chapter in Inglewood as late as October 1931. Hence, why there's a lot of racial tension in the area. Now, I'm just going to start here, right? First of all, we are two white boys from Surrey. I don't feel
No, we're gangsters.
I don't feel like we're widely qualified to talk about anything, let alone racial tensions in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
So given that a lot of his content is about racial tensions in Los Angeles, we might not be deep diving into that.
Just yeah, you're right. We don't have any right to be talking about any of that stuff.
No idea what we're doing. So anyway, 1986, this is the environment Jason comes into the world into. Now, he's born to a African-American father who was in a soul group called Elon, who had a top 45 hit in the 70s and stopped doing music to look after his son, and his mother was Scottish. Sure. Is this Elon?
Elon Butler.
Here we go. Yeah. James Brown, this is. Into it.
This is called Getting Soul, Part 1.
Is there a part 2?
No.
Good for him.
They didn't get that far.
It's very like emo naming. Just throw in a part 1 with no part 2. Don't know. All right.
Oh, a little scream.
I know, right? Good. So, growing up, father being a big part of the music scene, music's always been an essential part, although he has got an uncle from Scotland who introduced him to rock music, buying him the albums 16 Stone by Bush. Woof.
Wow.
I know. And OK Computer by Radiohead. He states that Bush is still his favourite band. Does he?
What?
Is that true? I don't think that's true.
Where are you reading this?
Wikipedia, facts. Don't think that's true. Other early inspirations include artists such as James Brown and Michael Jackson. That makes more sense. If you're familiar with Jason's development as an onstage performer, so let's just get to another thing. We've seen all ages of Jason's performances, right?
Yeah, I think so.
From Bin on Head Jason.
Yeah, classic.
To, for those of you who don't know, what he would do is he would find a bin from somewhere on stage, put over his head, and dive into the crowd. That was a signature. He also dives off the stage into bins. It's another thing.
There's always been bins. And like, there's always a bin on hand.
Yeah. Do you think it's in his rider?
Yeah, one metal old school bin, please. Not a wheelie bin.
Right. No.
Not an amateur.
No. Nothing with padding.
No.
Maybe it's padding. Do you think they're stage bins? They're like a constructed... Yeah, like Slipknot. All their shit's like fake and padded and stuff. If they have like... Do you think the bin's all covered in like foam inside of it?
It's got a load of mics in it.
Yeah, crash protection. So that when he dives into the crowd, conspiracy theories about bins. Emo Dead Podcast.
Do you think he has a warehouse somewhere in the UK full of bins?
Yeah, it's a bin test stage dive area.
Do you think it's he brings his own bin from the States, or he purchases a new bin when he comes to UK, or are they just bins that he collects along the way? Because there's always a bin, right?
So, write in Emo Dead Podcast. The subject line is bin facts. And I want you to send us bin related theories and content relating to Jason. You can DM Matt at Emo Dead Podcast on Instagram, or you can send emails to emodeadpodcast@gmail.com.
See, Jason, if you're listening, I've sent you numerous messages.
So many.
And fair enough, you've ignored them. Don't blame you. But this is a sort of questions you would have been asked. As I said in my messages, we don't do normal interviews.
No.
This is what we would have been talking about.
We would have done a good solid hour on bins.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not too late, mate. Get in touch.
Missing out. Because I know that wheelie bins have just been introduced to America. You see?
Now?
Yeah. Only just done it.
Great.
So, like, right. So you see, this is the sort of up to date, current content we could have gone into. Not racial tensions, not police violence. Bins.
Do you remember the day your family got their first ever wheelie bin?
Yeah, I did. I do.
I genuinely really remember. I remember the day. I remember, like, the whole family, like, gathering around this bin. And
right.
I climbed in it, and Dad pushed me around.
Yes.
Like, we were buzzing.
Right. And I remember when the bin truck arrived, and we were waiting to see how it worked.
Waiting outside,
because in the kitchen window which faced the road, it was me, my dad, and my brother, and we're like, how does it work? Because we couldn't fathom what the rest of the machine looked like.
Of course, they would have had to update all the trucks as well.
Well, because previously you'd had a bunch of men smoking cigarettes, throwing the bin over their shoulder into the thing. And now it was
that
like
must
the
have
bin.
Been exhausting.
Right. The bin connected to the machine connects to the bin, lifts it up and tips it in. I've just explained how a wheelie bin works, but sure. Right.
This is useful to our American listeners, which, by the way, we have a lot of, apparently. I checked.
And I'm imagining our Singaporean listener is thrilled by this content. I don't know what they have. Just write in. What bins do you have in your town? Even a podcast. And we were transfixed by the way that the bin system works.
Yeah. Good day.
We're a solid 20 minutes in and we haven't got past bins.
Good day.
After the bin throwing stuff, he started doing a lot of like Michael. There was a period where he would do literal Michael Jackson cosplay dancing. Remember that?
No.
Where he would do like little. All right, never mind. 2002. So
okay,
that would have made him.
Back on time.
Back on target. 2002, 1986. Someone do some maths. 16?
No. Oh, yeah. 14, 15, 16. Shit. Yeah. Well played.
Look at that. I can nailed it.
All your dyslexia.
I know, right?
Dysfunction.
Whatever. Yeah, I know. I can nailed it. Just got straight in there.
I'm calling bullshit on it.
Got together with four lads who you don't have to learn their names because they're not going to last long, to four let live. A post-hardcore band based out of Los Angeles.
Who initially struggled. Did you know that?
Right. There was. What band does not initially struggle?
I know the answer to this.
Panic at the Disco.
Yeah, that's a good one. 5 Seconds to Summer? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
I went for a band that I didn't know the name of.
I think Smashing Pumpkins got signed after four gigs or something.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. Probably a lie. Emo Dad Facts. So, the breakout one was Fake History, which is the second one.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Slow down. Stop the bus.
Oh, all right. You want to talk about the first record, do you?
No, I just thought we'd give a little sample and discuss it briefly.
All right. I haven't even bothered to write down what it's called.
Have you listened to it ever?
Speak Like You Talk, sure.
Nope, that's not it. Do
speak
your research,
like,
James.
Speak Like You Talk is the debut studio album by American rock band Let Live.
Wrong.
All right. What's before that?
Exhaustion,
Salt Water,
salt
and Everything
water,
in Between.
And Everything in Between. Or are they calling that an EP?
They're calling that an EP.
It's eight songs, 33 minutes. That's album to me.
33 minutes. Yeah, that counts. Dear the universe, can we settle on a definition of EP and LP?
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Really helpful for podcasts that don't really deal in facts.
Do you want to hear a bit of the first one? I listened to it yesterday for the first time in a million years. And it's very, what's the word? Raw.
Yeah,
and
I
don't mean that in a bad way.
No,
like,
but
that's
like
a good thing.
They were 17.
And it's very, it's very, how do I say this? It's very Glassjaw.
Right. Get onto that in a minute.
Right. Should we have a little sampler?
Yes.
I can't remember what song's good and what's bad, so I'm just going to click one at random. This is called Showcase Heart. Very emo name. Here we go. Oh, sounds like California skate punk at this point. What, were those drums recorded in a garage?
Yeah, probably. This is Your Favourite Weapon by Brand New.
Yeah.
It's got that vibe. With like, but with double kick drums for no reason.
Here we go. Oh, hi, Daryl.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? When you read someone's influences and they're like Bush and OK Computer or something, some bullshit, and you're like, no, you just heard Glassjaw's first two records and just did that. There's nothing else in here, lads.
How do you feel about this?
I let everybody off for the first record or two when you're 17. I mean, I'm not going to ever listen to it, but like, great, why not?
I quite like it.
Well, it's another Glassjaw record. Fine. What is it? We have Glassjaw at home. That's what Yassi Salek says.
Huh?
Where she refers to what, you know, like that thing when your parents want to go, you want to go to McDonald's, but your mum's like, I'll make you a McDonald's burger and it tastes like the shittest thing on the planet next to McDonald's.
Yeah.
But it's an attempt to a McDonald's burger. That is, we have Glassjaw at home.
Oh, I see. Good. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Good, right?
Yeah. Very good.
Stealing other people's ideas. But on that, they do lots of touring, right? They're like touring, playing gigs, doing stuff.
Bins, I imagine.
Now, it's no surprise that they then make the second record, 2010. So, fact fans, we are now 20 something. My maths has actually left the building.
Hang on.
Oh, no, we've got to Speak Like You Talk. That's next.
2007.
Sorry. It's 19 now.
Are you going to go with the age thing the way through?
No, I'm going to stop now.
Yeah.
As soon as you hit 20, I'm out.
I don't feel that's relevant anymore.
Now, apparently, even though there are 12 songs on the album, there are 69 tracks in total.
What? What are you on about?
Of these tracks,
because it's like lots of tracks in one song. Is that what that means?
Of these tracks, 8 are individual full-length songs. 3 tracks make up the collective song, 2 in 6.8 billion, and 58 tracks make up the hidden song, which is revealed as You Are Not Your Username, followed by a Roman numeral for each track.
Oh.
Which is the 12th song on the CD, 6 minutes, 51 seconds. And apparently there are 58 tracks. tracks in 6 minutes and 51 seconds, which sounds like something you and I would make up in an interview because we were bored and would end up on a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, that's not on Spotify. So
does it end at 2 in 68 billion C?
It does.
Yeah. I mean, the lyrics, the song titles on this are quite something.
Yeah. Don't fuck with me, tiger. I'm sick.
That's a good one. Punk's not dead, Jesus is something a 19-year-old would write. Incest as a legacy, we're not talking about that. I don't know what's happening there, and I don't want to know. Same for beauty queen breaststroke. Absolutely not. Is where I stand on that.
Do you like focus on song titles?
So learning just how bonkers I am and neurodiverse I am, I've realized that what happens is my brain is very literal. So if I see a song title called City of Champions, my first thought is, what city and what are they champions of?
Well, he does live in Inglewood, where all the teams are.
Now I know, right? Now I know that, right? And that's why this podcast got a lot of logistics on it. I then have to take a big pause and be like, that probably doesn't matter. Let's just listen to the song.
Just a name.
Like, it's just a name. But like, I have to talk myself out of it. So if I see something, so that's why song titles trip me up, because if I see them, I'm kind of like, have to do, let my brain go through it a bit and be like, because like, I still don't understand the name of the band.
Let Live.
Because Let Live is like a, suggests peace with a current situation.
See, I don't, I like, I, with band names, album names, and probably song titles, I just read it. I don't like think about the meaning or anything like that. I just yes or no go, oh, I like the sound of that name.
Right.
Like, one of my favorite band names is the Get Up Kids. I mean, right, what the fuck does that even mean? Don't know. Never even thought about it. I'm sure maybe it probably does mean something.
Right.
But I just like the way it sounds.
I think that's how most people are. I immediately have to spend a good 10 minutes asking, what did they get up for? Speak how you talk. What?
Speak what you talk.
Either way, what? What do you, what? What? Of course you do. What do you mean?
Speak
about?
Like you talk. Yeah, I, anyway. Maybe I'm the odd one.
No.
No one's odd. We're just different.
All right. I think the diplomas for the people that I speak to regularly who send me certificates saying that I'm bonkers.
Bonkers.
Bonkers. All right. Again, we're not learning any names of anybody else involved because they're gonna not gonna be around for very long.
Is this the song? Is this the album that starts with the kind of? I mean, I'm gonna play it in a minute to find out, but like the, he tries to do a high pitch note and it kind of goes a bit funny, and then he kind of goes and then tries it again.
Yeah, I think this is. Yeah, I think that's it.
Let's
find out.
I think it's good. Here we go. I think this is it. I like this album, just putting it out there.
I think there's such a difference between this one and the last one. This one feels like they're actually becoming their own thing. And
this
I feel
one sounds like,
like
they used a studio.
Yeah, but also like they're actually following their own interests. And I also think that they've realized between the two records that Jason can really sing and that his vocal abilities are unusual.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff on this is just astonishing. And also slightly pitchy, but never mind.
That's the emotion.
All right.
I like the song a lot.
It's review. Almost
put it on the poster.
But like the riffage underneath it is almost new metal, isn't it?
Yeah. Funny you should mention that, because I want to talk about that later.
Oh, all right. Exciting.
Anyway, I think that is a from a very selfish, my opinion point of view. The start of that song stroke album grabs my attention.
Oh, for sure.
Well played is what I say.
Defo, it's how you start a record. And I think that this is, they're one of the bands that they really know how to start an album, and but often the best the albums are very front loaded, so the returns are diminishing as you get further into the record for me.
Not sure I agree. I probably do. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not.
It's all right. So I got a podcast. So it takes them 5 whole years to make the next record.
Hang on, my information that I have has decided not to even bother mentioning that album we just spoke about. Like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Oh, it did. Yes. The notes the band's underground nature and evolving style. Now, underground nature, is that just a tag that they give bands that aren't being successful?
Yeah.
What's your band like, mate? We've got an underground nature to us.
Well, also to be fair, they're on a label called At One, who I've known any of us have ever heard of. So I think you'd probably say that because they're not on anyone's radars, they're not on any kind of record label really. This is underground, this is independent, this is all that stuff.
Yep. So yeah, the next one got re-released. Obviously it got released and then re-released by, drumroll, Epitaph.
Yeah, so
is that right? Yeah.
Speaking of, like, so it gets released in 2010 on Tragic Hero. They start kind of like playing with bigger acts, and they bump into a little band called Bring Me the Horizon. Ollie of Bring Me the Horizon and Fashion fame apparently rang up Brett Gurewitz of Epitaph and said, oh, you've got to get in touch with these lads. And Epitaph signs them and it gets re-released. Now,
hang on. Brett, bring me big at this point.
Big enough to be able to call Brett Gurewitz.
Well, that was my question.
I think that this would have coincided with Bring Me's album tour for the one with the circle on the front. Whatever that one is.
Look that up now because it's bothering me.
And they were, I feel like they were playing some pretty big slots by that point.
Please hold, caller. Albums. Here we go. No. What? What year are we talking about?
Oh my God. 2010.
2013 was when Eternal came out. 2010, there is a hell, believe this was when they were still shit, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't. I struggle. Yeah, the one with a circle on is when I start paying attention.
Yeah, same.
So,
Anyway.
all right, but there you go. This record, like, they're still not saying at this point that they are a political band, but they're saying that they wanted the album to stimulate political, emotional, and intellectual awareness, which is a bit of a cop out. You're either political or not, in my arrogant opinion. Upon its re-release, it got, like, everyone started caring about it, and it got really great reviews. Rock Sound put Fake History into their 101 modern classics list, which, sure. But it got really good scores from everybody. They really liked it. My Renegade 86, that's the one, isn't it?
Do you want to hear about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we go. Whoop. Ah. On the Radio 1 Rock Show, do they go ooh, blah, blah, when they're playing music?
No, they're like professionals. Which is why we're not on there.
Imagine. Oh, and this is Renegade 86 by Let Live.
You know when?
Ooh, hang on.
Well, we're just hopping and talking over anyway.
Talking over the top. Wait, let's be quiet for a moment.
Forgotten that we have to, like, talk over stuff now.
No, we don't.
I think we do. I think if we don't talk over it, we're going to get in trouble.
No, we don't. It's fine. No one cares. No one gives a shit. All the court cases are going to land on
No,
my
I
door,
know, no, I know. They're going to
on the same day.
Yeah, they're going to play that clip in court. That's what's going to happen. They considered the album more of a classic than Queens of the Stone Age Songs for the Deaf and Alkaline Trio's Good Morning, they
Who
being
did?
Rock Sound. Which is big calls. Maybe
yeah.
Somebody got a little bit overexcited.
I mean, personally, I prefer this, but I'm still not going to agree with that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I feel like by this, I'm just going to...
I want to know, like, while you're, whatever you're doing. So on the album before, there was this 6.8 billion, like, in about four song titles. And then on this album, there's mention of 6.8 billion. Does anyone actually know what it means? Oh.
Population of the world, surely.
Ah. Oh. Hang on. Please hold caller. Yeah, population of the world, which was around 6.8 billion. Good knowledge. This implies that Jason thinks that the whole world is ill and dying. The 666. Oh, I get it now.
Right, there you go.
But would you put that in like five times?
If so, this is when you listen back to all of this music. One thing feels quite clear is that when Jason gets an idea, he
like a dog with a bone.
Yeah, he tends to stick to that idea and come back to that idea a lot rather than moving on to a new one.
Yeah.
I would also like to inform everybody that by this point, we've lost every single original member apart from Jason.
Do you think that you can get away with it if in his eyes or the label's eyes, the album before didn't really do anything? And I'm just talking generally with bands. Can you do the same thing again on the new album?
So I want one of my dream guests is somebody from Bad Religion, right? And I want to talk to them about this because they had about eight or nine albums before that album that blew up, Stranger Than Fiction. And on the following albums, they did a lot of re-recording songs that had happened before. And I wonder if it's like that. If they were like, we know that people are not going to go back and listen to our nine records, but we've got some really great songs there that we think that people will like, but they're not going to bother to go and find them. But we own them, they're ours.
Yep.
So fuck it. Let's just stick that on. If you look at the Offspring's early stuff, they one of their songs they re-recorded like five times and put it on different things, like they were just trying to get it right. So I feel like, and also there's something in slight digression, but I feel like what's his name? Offspring singer man who flies planes. What's his name?
Dexter.
Dexter Holland. He's a scientist, right? And what scientists do is they evolve the same thing to make it better. They don't start again every time.
He's a scientist.
Yeah, he's got a PhD in microbiology,
Does he?
right? Yeah. So
That's good
that,
because he can't sing.
wow. Opinions about Dexter singing to Matt at emodadpodcast.com. Not after we
Anymore.
met on Instagram. Your secret word is, your secret phrase is Dexter can sing or Dexter can't sing, and that's all you need to send to the thing. But what I mean is, if you it's like a constant improvement on the of one idea rather than having to move to a new idea every time.
You got
And
out of that quite well.
I think it's really interesting. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I just curious.
Yeah, me too. Because I think it's like a kind of I find it really interesting in terms of all that stuff. So, wouldn't I mean like creative process?
Yep. Would you
So,
do the same painting twice?
there's. I can't remember the exact number, but I think it's 40, 48 versions of the scream. You know that famous painting of the person in a field screaming? I think
Yep.
it's about 48 of them.
What, like, before they got to the final one?
Yeah, you just kept doing it. I'm gonna find the exact number because it is interesting.
And can you find some, not, I don't mean you find now, but is it possible to find like the all of them kind of side by side so you can see how it progressed?
I'm just looking it up. No, I mean, I'm of course I exaggerated. There is,
It's four, isn't it?
he painted four. He did two in
That's it.
pastels. No, wait, he did two in pastels. He then did a lithograph stone, which then did a bunch more prints of it. And he just kept doing it in different formats because that image he was obsessed with and he just wanted to do the right version of it.
And he
And I
never
think
quite got
that's.
there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's really interesting.
Good.
Good, good, good. Good, good, good.
Good. Where are we at?
I
Fake
can't.
history.
We're at fake history, but I can't. I feel like I want it. Yeah, go on. Fake history. That's the next one. Stuff.
Isn't that what we just did?
The
No,
blackest
yeah, we just did
beautiful.
it.
The Blackest Beautiful is the next one. It's the third studio album. As we know, that's not true, but sure. Epitaph Records, July 9th, 2013. It took them 6 months to make this one. Four drum sessions, 10 recording engineers.
What?
10.
Why?
Now, it may occur to people by this point that Jason might not be allegedly the easiest person to work with.
What gives you that impression? Why would now, you say that?
When they began recording in the studio, the band members felt little pressure to complete the album as they felt they could deliver something similar to the previous album, i.e. if you've already done something once, why would it be a problem to do it again? Which I think is a great attitude and very good. Well done, everyone.
So are they on now, a different lineup at this stage?
Yeah, it's a completely new lineup.
It just keeps changing, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of the same people from the one before, but that was a whole brand new lineup to the one before that.
Yeah. So 10 sound engineers. How does that happen?
Well, so
poor working conditions.
I'll come to it. So they start off, but they feel like the demos lack the same bite. So they then do a tour when they supported Under Oath. I mean, this is so 2013. They decide to bring their studio equipment with them to record on the road, which sounds like a bad idea.
Make use of all those bins?
Right. So it says they have a pop-up studio in a bathroom in South Florida or in the woods off the highway at Wyoming. What? In December, the band felt they were done with recordings. There was absolutely nothing left to try and walked away from the project. The band had recorded the drums on four different occasions. They finally finished recording a static studio in January. Now, the Jason is interviewed with The Independent. That's right, the British newspaper, so you can see how big they were at the time, right? And he says, I ask only a couple of things of the engineer, right?
Engineers.
Right. So let's just say only a couple of things. Now, what do you think those could possibly be?
Work for free.
That's one. Come, right, good.
Come to the woods.
That's why you're a businessman. Come to the woods. Engineer good would be on my list.
Yeah.
Like, put microphones good. Make sound great.
Do as I say.
Well, that's one of his. Although it's slightly different. I only ask a couple of things of the engineer, like I ask them not to be there.
So there was 10 people not being there.
No idea why people quit. Or I ask them if we can turn the lights off, because it's a very vulnerable, raw, vulnerable state that it puts me in, and I'm still human, and I'm still concerned about my image in that sense sometimes.
Oh, okay. So context. He doesn't want them to be there because he's singing these emotional lyrics, and some sound engineer gawping at him is ruining the vibe. Is that
right?
Is that right?
That's, I think that's what he's
not,
saying.
Not be there at all.
Right. And
hide under the desk.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Can you just go under the desk?
It'll put the headphones on and a sleep mask and just like do the faders by feel. I think, bless him, Jason seems to take criticism to heart, because they'd had some sort of criticism that the previous record had sounded really overproduced. And if you remember, in the time period that they did this, there was a lot of fan stuff about punk bands sounding too much like pop bands and the whole thing. So the band strove for an organic and authentic sound that was very human and reflected the sound of their live performances. I remember Thursday's third record. There was a lot of fuss about that. Same thing, where they were like, we wanted to just sound like exactly as we are live and this whole thing. And you're like, no, I want a nice recording.
Make it nice.
They took an analog route where they used the test mix of the album as it spoke to them in its raw energy, then went through 10 sound engineers, and then eventually gave up. During the recording sessions, the drummer quit. I've no idea why. Could it be because they had to record it four times? They then got another guy in to do it, but he didn't actually join the band. because he couldn't cope. So a drum tech from the band of Mice and Men called Lionel Robinson eventually replaced the guy who actually recorded the drums to then play the stuff live.
So I'm just whizzing through the credits. Produced by a man or lady called Kit Walters.
This All right.
One. Should we have a quick look about this person?
Sure.
I'm just wondering who is like overseeing all this and sacking all these sound engineers. Kit Walters. Here we go. An American recording artist, songwriter and producer, blah, blah, blah. Created numerous fan favorites and bestsellers with artists such as Joel Adams, Alisana, A Skylit Drive, and Let Live. He's worked as a writer, producer, and mix engineer on projects for World Wrestling Entertainment. That's all you need to know. And was the featured vocalist for Konami's cross-platform video game Metal Gear Rising.
Brilliant.
Good.
He looks Goodera.
A very good-looking chap.
There's also a guy called Stephen George, whose production work is also is listed as Space Jam soundtrack, engineering, mixing, and programming, and R. Kelly, 1995, engineer, mixer, and programming.
You can get in touch with Kit. Maybe we should contact him and to ask about his time
on The Blackest Beautiful.
On The Blackest Beautiful and recording songs for the WWE, which is in my mind because I'm watching the Vince McMahon autobiography, not autobiography, documentary.
Oh yeah, is that on the Netflix?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get into that. For fans of Jason's performances, this is Big Beard Jason period.
Oh, that's good to know.
Just if you're fixing. So at this point, Jason not only was he diving around in bins, he looked like he lived in a bin. That was pretty much that was the vibe.
Brutal.
Going on.
Should we have a little tingle of a single?
Yeah, let's do that.
Might as well go with opening track again. Did the same sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
This must have been one of the woodland recordings. Do you think? Hang on, pause.
Have you just played like the demos? Is this how it actually starts?
No, this is how it starts. Do you think this is some sort of like middle finger to the whole process?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, I do. There it is. Yeah, there you go. All that. For me, this is one nano step away from Limp Bizkit.
Yeah. Post-hardcore biscuit.
Yeah, post-hardcore biscuit. That's exactly what this is.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, I love Limp Bizkit. I love post-hardcore. I'm in.
It's kind of $3 bill, y'all, post-hardcore.
Yeah.
Venn diagram.
Yeah, it's in there, right? Now, if you were around in 2013 for the release of this record, it was a big deal. They put it out online streamed for free because we were in that period when we'd just given up with the concept of paying for music.
We'd just given up.
We would just like get the music out. We're not making any money out of this. Fine. They toured the United Kingdom and Ireland in October, playing History and The Blackest Beautiful as headliners.
Did we go?
We went, yeah. Many of the dates were sold out. London date was moved from Camden Underworld to Electric Ballroom, which we went to. I'm pretty sure we went to that. Most of the critics were saying that they were the most exhilarating live band around. Facts.
Yeah, I'll go.
Never seen anything like it. Absolutely blinding.
It was never, never. We've seen. Obviously, we'll get onto Fever 3333333 in a bit, but we've seen him live. I'm gonna guess 5 times.
Sure.
Over the years, always incredible.
Always. Would go and see anything he's in ever. It's always a great show.
Yeah.
They then start
emo
support.
Dad facts.
Right. They then start supporting Bring Me the Horizon for that album with the circle on the cover of Mice and Men. Weird. And apparently Architects. Now, I don't think Post Hardcore Biscuit has a lot in common with what those other bands were doing around this time, or it just feels like a weird pairing to me.
I felt like they never fitted with anyone though,
other than a Glassjaw tour.
No, even that, like, I don't know. They felt like outsiders to me. Like, they, I don't know, just this weird. I don't mean this in a negative way, but like this weird, like they're in like their own little weird bubble, and they never really fitted with anyone they went on tour with. Maybe it was because of their crazy, like their stage show was so incredible. In my opinion, it was a risk to have them as a support act, because let's be honest, they're going to blow you off the stage.
Or break all your shit.
Or break everything. And obviously, headline is different. But I think, I don't know, I can't remember if you went to this one, but I saw them support Newfound Glory.
No, I didn't. I didn't go to that. That's,
I can't remember
that's
where that
weird.
Was. But,
that's also weird. Yeah, I know, I get it. It's hard to find the who you would pair them with.
Yeah. I think they're too crazy.
Yeah, and they do, it's a lot of genres, even though we're joking and calling them post-hardcore biscuit. It's still like you've got punk, you've got funk, you've got post-hardcore, you've got rap, you've got, it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, anyway, that's just my feeling about them as a whole. They've never really kind of fitted with any scene, which isn't a bad thing.
Nah. So, 3 years later, June 10th, 2016, we get If I'm the Devil, which is fucking brilliant, this record, let's be honest. I was listening to it yesterday. This is a great record.
It is a good record, isn't it? This is when they started going, like, hardcore political. Like, there was obviously a lot of political before, but this was where it was like at the forefront of what they were doing.
Right. And I feel like they were incorporating more black music influences, and every song felt really worked on top to bottom, thought through, complete.
Yep. Should we have a little sample?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is A Week Ago.
Thank you.
This is now more like straight up rock.
It's like indie sleaze, isn't it?
I could support the Killers with this.
Or, yeah. So, writing the album proved to be difficult for the band members. I'm shocker. How again, unusual.
Maybe just stop writing.
Like,
is that much of an effort? Just
I mean, yeah. Jason said, we got into a bunch of arguments we were writing this record. Some of us wanted to do our punk songs and some of us wanted to do our more rock songs. Me, I wanted to do some shit that sounded like Kanye West meets Royal Blood or something.
Oh, there you go.
There it is. I think that's, yes, that comes, like, he definitely didn't lose that post-it note. But when we started to let go and just said, fuck it, let's write the song, see how I feel about it when it's done, like a more advanced version of the sort of rock and soul approach that we've been trying to follow. Correct. That's what you got. We finally got to really explore using all these other instruments and sounds in our music. There are acoustic elements, there are electronic elements like Radiohead or A Tribe Called Quest. There's things like the sound of us slapping desks and walls deliberately, or like it's just in there. We tried everything, singing
slacking
a lot
sound
more.
Engineers.
Slacking sound engineers. There's no evidence here of actually slacking sound engineers. They did lose a guitar player.
Lose
so
him.
We're down to four lads now.
Where did they lose him?
We're not sure. In the woods in Wyoming, they did with all the gear. They left him with all the studio gear and just never came back for it.
He lives there now.
Yeah, we're still on Epitaph. This was produced by somebody called Jason Pilbro. But if you click on his link, you get a link to something called Elimino P, which is a New Zealand rock band. And he is the guitarist and the backing vocalist for this band. So, a traditional choice.
Hang on. It's Justin Pilbro. Yeah, what? Producer. Here we go. Oh, no. Yep, no information on this dude at all.
I mean, it is wild to me that the band, for as big as they were at that time, were not working with a Brendan O'Brien, Ross Robinson. Because that's normally what bands do when they're about that big, they move, that they get some big name producer to do the next record.
Maybe these producers
met
refused.
Jason. Like, yeah, I mean, it just seems really surprising that they didn't go for a big name guy.
This bloke is just random.
Yeah, he doesn't appear to have done anything else.
Anything that the neighborhood, I think I've heard of them. But
do you think this experience just put him off producing for life?
Fuck this, I can't be asked.
Right.
Do you think that maybe it's a case of, and this is pure speculation, I have no idea, but like, if Jason like clearly likes to be in control of the whole situation, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So do I.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he just like hires some like a yes man who's just gonna do the technical side of things and do as he's told.
Right.
Whereas John Feldman might be like, no, do this, do this, do that, do that.
Right. Yes. You don't know, but that's where my money goes.
Yeah. I think that's fair, which is fine.
On April the 28th, 2017, the band announced that there will be no further activity for the foreseeable future, which is a breakup. And then in June and July, so April, May, June, like not even 2 months later, they start teasing Viva 333.
Should we save that?
Oh, okay.
For the next
all right.
Episode.
All right, we're two parting.
Wink.
Oh.
Hint, hint.
Oh, okay. So tune in next for the Viva 333 episode of the Jason Aaron Butler story.
And Boutique Hotels.
And Boutique Hotels. Boutique Hotels content. Travis Barker content. John Feldman content. All that stuff. More bins. Shenanigans. Wearing of bulletproof vests and riot shields. Political biscuit rock. Biscuit. Political biscuit. We'll post hardcore biscuit, and then we're going to become political biscuit. That's what's up. If you were a biscuit, what kind of biscuit would be a political biscuit?
Oh, custard cream.
Or those stupid little coffee biscuits that Biscoff they give
thing.
You. Yeah, them. That's a political biscuit.
I was going to say why, but isn't a why, is it?
I don't know. If you tell us your political biscuit in on the email dad Instagram account, message Matt, I'm a political biscuit, and then put which one you are, or you can send us an email with your political biscuits. Give us a real radio show. Our call-ins will be off the hook.
A photo of your political biscuit. Send me a photo of your political biscuit.
Send
Even
us a
better,
photo of your biscuit.
Post it on Instagram and tag us.
Post a photo
we will
of,
share.
You eating your political biscuit, and we will reshare it and talk about it on a future episode of Emo Dad at length.
And we'll probably analyse everything in the photo, so make sure you have acknowledged what's in the background. Is there a pet involved? All the things.
Think of the composition like you're creating art, because we'll assume everything that's in the photo
is intentional
and part of that conversation.
And we will pick it apart like you would not believe. Please, someone do that. I beg someone to send us a photo of them eating a biscuit, which is not a sentence I ever thought I'd be saying out loud.
Right.
Right. Okay. So should we we'll finish this one episode?
Yes, we will finish.
Have a biscuit.
Yeah. And we'll be back, innit? So we need some background music for the situation for when I do stuff. Emo Dad Podcast Europop style. Wagwan, Emo Dad listeners. We're back as per usual. Follow the Instagram account where we will not post naked ladies, because that's what rave people do. It's Emo Dad Podcast on Instagram.com. Go to the email account and send us pictures of your biscuits. That is not a sexual innuendo. Actual sugary treats. Again, not a sexual innuendo. Email at bookers.com. Listen to the season playlist. Listen and follow to the season playlist. And while you're there, listen and follow the Emo Dad Podcast on Spotify and all podcast platforms. Leave us a rating, more than four, less than six. And if you haven't rated us on one platform, go to all platforms. Ratings, all platforms. make friends on the Emo Dad Discord, where people can talk about anything you want if you are the lone emo in your area. I just realized my window's open, so my neighbors are getting a wicked commentary today. Amazing. Top Cat. Did I say I was Top Cat recently? I sent a GIF, I think, of me as Top Cat to Matt recently, and that's why this has turned up. Leave us a tip, because my bank balance is not the bank balance of a Top Cat. I'd like it to be, so send us a tip and buy some merch. Buy a fucking t-shirt. I think we're out.
And also, we need your tips, because we are... This is connected. Going to see House of Protection featuring ex-members of Fever Free next week, which will have happened when you... No, it wouldn't have. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So we need your money so that we can buy...
Alcohol-free beer.
And alcohol-free beer. Thank you. Thank you, please.
That's right. And if you're also going, give us a wave. I'm not sure I can... I'm too introverted to have a great conversation with you.
Talk to me.
But give us a talk to Matt. Talk to Matt. Give us a wave. And
James
I'll
watch.
I'll watch. I'll probably awkwardly interject with something about Top Cat. Thanks for listening to another level of chaotic episode on the Emo Dad Podcast. And we will be back next week with Political Biscuit.
How do we end?
We play a little bit of the song, I think.
What song?
I don't know, something from like the last record they did before they died. What was it called? If I'm the Devil.
Okay.
What track is it? It's the one called The Kids Clapping. Is that Good Morning America? That one.
Don't worry, I've got it covered. We will see you next week.